Catholic Views. I'm your host, Renee Kranz. Today on the show, we are going to be talking to Father Christopher Cowles from Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish in Sioux Falls. We'll be talking about properly forming your conscience, let's say it that way, and then how to discern from that conscience. So it should be an interesting conversation, and Father Cowles is always a lot of fun. So he'll turn a serious conversation into something fun. First, we're going to talk to Dr. B, also always fun.
I was just going to say, I think I make something serious fun every week.
I think you do.
I'm Biblical Bites with Dr. B.
Right. I mean, how can that not be fun?
How can I not be fun?
Right.
We've wasted enough of our listeners' time.
What do you got?
So the gospel today, one of the most well-known passages in the gospels, Renee, the parable of the sower.
Okay.
So what's interesting is just a little bit here. Matthew, this is taken from Matthew chapter 13. And while Jesus has spoken in parables before, this is the first time, and this is the first of a series of parables where Jesus says, and then Jesus taught the crowds in parables. In other words, Jesus had done it before and Matthew wrote the parables, but Matthew's drawing our attention. And now Jesus taught at length in parables. So he goes on for several parables teaching. And if we stop and wonder, why is Jesus teaching in parables at length? Mm-hmm. So a parable, Renee, what would you say? This is not like a pop quiz to you, because I know you love those. What would be your guess about why would one teach in parables?
I think to make it easier to understand.
Yeah. So parables really use examples, analogies, illustrations from the everyday life of the listener to make a point that the teacher wants to make. So Jesus was not the inventor of parables, right, but he used them to teach the common people, in this case of Galilee, and then ultimately throughout the Holy Land, about himself and about the kingdom of God that he came to inaugurate. But there's an aspect to parables, though, where there's a bit of a mystery, because in order to get a parable, you have to stop and think about it.
Right.
First of all.
But sometimes they didn't get them.
Exactly. Yeah. They don't get them. And in today's gospel, Jesus goes on at length. So the disciples ask, after Jesus tells the parable of the sower, they say to him, the disciples approached him and said, "Why do you speak to them in parables?" And then Jesus says this, and maybe you heard this at Mass already, maybe you haven't yet. He said to them in reply, "Because knowledge of the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven has been granted to you, but to them it has not been granted."
Okay.
How does that sound to you? Try to hear that for the first time. How does it sound to you? Knowledge, because why do you teach this way, Jesus? Because knowledge of the mysteries of the kingdom has been given to you, but not to them.
That somehow they're set apart.
Right.
Yeah.
How does it feel?
Probably a little scary, I would think, but
but also a little exclusive.
Sure, yeah.
It's for you, but not for other people. Like, so why I'm highlighting this right now is, I think as Christians, we are used to seeing, or if you will, imagining Jesus the way we do a teddy bear. Oh, look at the cute little Jesus. Oh, he's so soft and cuddly. No. There's a book I bought once. Ultimately, the book was worth little more than the title. I shouldn't say that, because I'm going to tell you the title. Jesus Mean and Wild.
Okay.
Jesus Mean and Wild. And the point of the book, and again, like really in some ways the title summed up the book. When we read the gospel with fresh eyes, Jesus says some things that don't seem very nice. Right. And here he's saying, "I want you to get it, but not them." Why would he do that?
Right.
And the example, because I wondered about this for a long time, and I don't know if it's a grace that God gave me or why, but I finally stumbled upon the answer. And it's there in what Jesus says in the gospels, but I just want to paraphrase and give you an example from my own life, or from our lives, if you will. What's the building right next door to us, Renee, as we're recording today?
The beautiful Cathedral of St.
Yes.
Joseph.
And what's around the outside of the cathedral?
What's around the outside?
Yes, I know.
The campus?
No, sorry. On the building itself.
Oh, stone?
Yes, and what else?
Stained glass?
Yes, very good.
Stop
good.
Giving me hints.
Stained glass. What does the stained glass look like from the outside, Renee?
It looks like nothing, really.
Dark?
Yeah. Yeah, you really can't tell what it is very
frankly,
well.
Yeah. So we know what stained glass is. Yeah. So when we see, but again, try to see a stained glass, like if you had never seen a church before, you never seen stained glass before, and you come upon this building, you're like, why did they paint it that color? Black.
Yeah.
But then you go inside. It's once you go inside, you see the truth, the beauty, the goodness of the stained glass.
Okay.
The same thing is true with understanding not just the parables, but all of Jesus' teachings that we receive the church. You can't get it if you stay on the outside.
Okay.
The only way to understand Jesus' parables is to not sort of sit back and just be a fan of Jesus. Yay, go Jesus.
That was such a great story.
That was so awesome. Now what? What's your next trick? The only way to get it is not to be a fan, but to follow him.
Okay.
The only way to get the stained glass is to go inside the cathedral, inside the church. The only way to understand Jesus' teachings is to commit to him. And when we do that, it's like when you walk inside, oh my gosh, this is amazing. What looks dark and dreary and black and drab from the outside is incredible from the inside. Mm-hmm. But you don't see it until you go inside. These parables seem like, what the heck, what's going on? Like the sower, and why is he still? But when you follow him, when you commit yourself to him with your whole heart, mind, body, spirit, and soul, then it all makes sense. So we could have talked a lot about the content of the parable of the sower, but I just wanted to focus today on why Jesus teaches in parables, why he seems to be exclusive. It's for you, not for them. It is because he wants to draw them inside. So let's come inside and we'll see what Jesus has to say to you and me.
Yeah, that helps a lot. Thanks, Chris.
You bet.
All right, let's move on to our interview. Joining me on the show today is Father Christopher Cowles, pastor at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish in Sioux Falls. Hello, Father Cowles.
Hello, how are you doing today?
I'm good, how are you?
Doing well, thanks.
Good, good. Before we start talking about forming a conscience and get all serious here, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Because a lot of people probably don't know who you are.
Well, for those who don't know who I am, I'm Father Christopher Cowles, pastor at Our Lady of Guadalupe, which was already mentioned in case you weren't listening earlier, and been pastor at Our Lady for right around 5.5 years.
Okay.
It'd be about 6 years ago they sent me down to Mexico to learn Spanish in 2 months. Wasn't totally successful. But I've had, you know, another 5 years to practice.
So are you getting better at it?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
The poor people at that parish have had to grow so much in patience during these years, but they've been really incredible for
good,
me.
Good, good.
And for the parish. But it's an incredible gift to be serving the Hispanics and Latinos in the Sioux Falls Diocese.
Yeah.
But a couple of interesting things. So most people don't know about me that while I do know the Spanish and I love this kind of stuff, I was originally studying to be an engineer, so I'm a total nerd. But then another interesting fact is because I've been a Lord of the Rings fanatic throughout the years, when I got back from Mexico, I had all this stored up energy. So I began to take on some interesting, we'll say pastimes.
Okay.
One of them is I learned how to make chainmail, which has been a lot of fun. So I have a large part of a suit of chainmail.
I don't even know what to do with that.
Defend yourself. There yes, you go. Defend right. yourself. The other one is I've learned how to throw tomahawks. So before
wow.
all the bars in town began to do the tomahawk throwing, including beer with it, which makes no sense whatsoever, I learned how to throw tomahawks.
That's
and actually
awesome.
Learned how to teach people how to do it. So I've had a lot of fun in the last couple of years teaching people how to throw and giving them methodology and then trying to see how far I could throw from. So
yeah. So between the engineering thing and the Lord of the Rings thing, you're like double nerd.
Oh,
you know
I am.
Right?
I'm a super nerd.
Okay, good.
I'm a super nerd.
There's nothing wrong with that. My husband is kind of a super nerd too, but
yay,
he's awesome.
Super nerds. That's awesome.
All right, so we'll get a little more serious here. So we're going to talk about properly forming your conscience, and then once you've done that, hopefully, how do you discern things in life using that conscience? So these are some difficult things
yeah.
to deal with.
So when we're looking at conscience, most of the people when they think of conscience immediately. What comes to mind is the idea of a little devil on one shoulder and an angel on the other shoulder. As much as it's been popularly brought forward, and the truth is, every single one of us has a guardian angel and a tempter, that isn't necessarily our conscience.
Okay.
Our conscience is kind of, we could say it's the ability within our reason to judge what is right and wrong, what is good and what is evil, and to make decisions based off of that. Just reading through one of the essays of Pope Benedict back when he was Ratzinger, he says, you got to think of the conscience as like an organ that has to be exercised, that has to be used, and has to be little by little formed so that it's stronger and that it's more available and able to be, in a certain sense, actuated so that we can bring it into the fullness of what it's meant to be. So saying fullness of what it's meant to be, I know that makes it sound like
philosophical speech. Father, can you make that easier for us,
yes,
please?
Yes, please.
So our conscience is something that begins by, in a certain sense, nature. We're born, and when we come into this world, we have an idea of what is right and what's wrong.
Right.
From the very beginning. But with time, it also has the nurture aspect, and that it has to be formed. And depending on the crowd that we're with, it either gets more greatly honed and strengthened, or it gets dulled and broken down. So with time, we can have an erroneous conscience, a conscience that's formed out of the wrong ideas, or we no longer have guilt over stuff that we should have guilt over in our lives.
Sure.
So you could take the example, I mean, these big, huge examples of Stalin and Hitler, who were probably following their conscience. And that's the really crazy part when we think about it. They didn't feel guilt of what they were doing, because little by little, they had ignored their conscience, worn it down, and gotten to the point that they thought, well, this is right to me. And some people would even say, oh, because they followed their conscience, they're in heaven. Well, there are certain things that are wrong, that are wrong, no matter what our conscience has come to believe. But we are called to follow our conscience. And this is where it gets confusing.
Yeah.
So as best as possible, we're called to listen to our conscience, because our conscience tells us what's right and wrong, what's good and correct, and what we shouldn't do. And in those moments, we typically will not err if we follow our conscience directly.
Right.
Because if we don't, what happens is our conscience convicts us and says, what were you thinking? What were you doing in that moment?
That's called guilt.
Yes. And guilt isn't necessarily a bad thing. Now, I thought it was a bad thing when my mom formed me in Catholic guilt as a young child all the time. But the truth is that guilt allows us to know our conscience is working, and is telling us that we've done something that's incorrect. Or when our conscience doesn't activate, when we've done something wrong, we know something's terribly wrong in those moments. So this is where it comes into the aspect of forming our conscience.
Okay. So how do we do that? How do we form? I mean, I have no idea.
It's a wonderful question. You take some clay and you form it together, you wet it down, and then you just little by little form it. No, it doesn't how it works with our conscience. So our conscience is something that is always being able to receive new information and new understanding. So when I seek to learn about my conscience, it's as simple as looking at the Ten Commandments. And most of those things are direct and understandable, and you figure it out right away. You know, oh yeah, it's not right to kill. I get that. I already knew that. Or I shouldn't commit adultery, or I shouldn't steal. In those moments, we already know those realities. Those are formed deep in our mind and in our heart. Cardinal Newman said that it was the aboriginal vicar of Christ. These are really big words. But think of, you know, the guy who has grown up in Australia and who has never known anybody else, but has always listened to the voice in his mind.
Mm-hmm.
He's saying that that's basically what our conscience is this vicar of Christ who is the Pope, but it's inside our reason, inside our mind, and it's showing us what we're called to do in the midst of our lives. So when we're forming our conscience, it's looking up and saying, well, what are the commandments? What does the church teach? Also knowing, based off of society, what is right and what's wrong. But from time to time, we need to just enter into conversation, to talk, to dialogue, to look to someone that we trust and we understand and ask them questions as well. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that the magisterium or the church always trumps our conscience. Our conscience is meant to be primary.
Okay. I think that's a big confusion for people there.
It is.
Yeah.
That was one of the big phrases of it had been now St. Henry Newman, who had said that, I will toast to the Pope, but I'll toast to my conscience first. And many people have misunderstood that. But the truth is, yes, our conscience should be primary. And then the Pope, the magisterium, the church seeks to inform our consciences as best as possible. But we also have to look at our gut feelings. If we say, well, my conscience tells me that I can do whatever I want here, well, there's still in our heart of hearts, there's still in our mind where we feel a tinge. We know that something's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And we're ignoring our conscience in that moment, and we're making justifications at those moments so that we can do what we want.
Right.
So forming our conscience is entering into dialogue, learning about the church's teachings, spending time to ask big questions,
right,
and to never stop asking those questions. There's a lot of people out there who will say, but Father, ignorance is bliss. Oh, it's so much better to just not talk about this stuff and move on with my life.
Mm-hmm. It is easier. Yeah. Maybe.
It seems easier.
Yes.
It seems easier. But do we really believe that the truth will set us free? This is one of the phrases of, of Jesus. He tells us that I've come to bring the truth and the truth will set you free. So oftentimes we think, no, I don't want to tell them the truth because it's going to make them feel bad and they're going to, it'll hurt their hearts and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. No, the goal should be to bring forth the truth, but with charity, with love. So we don't take a sledgehammer and write truth on the top of it and then hit someone over the head with it. No, it has to be done with charity.
We seem to try to do that a lot, but it doesn't work very well.
It doesn't. And rightly so. In our society, oftentimes we have a couple of approaches. One is we're going to bludgeon you with the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens in the process is people aren't prepared for it. Their hearts aren't open to it. And it actually wounds them. And in the process of them hearing the truth, they don't just reject the truth. They reject the person who has brought the truth.
Right.
And for me as a Catholic priest, if I were to be the one to come to them, tell them the truth in a way that was uncharitable, all of a sudden, they aren't just rejecting the truth, they're rejecting me. And because I stand for a person as the church, they reject the church in that moment.
Right.
So we have to be very careful how we bring this forward. You know, if I was going to talk about big issues, whether it be contraception or pornography or same-sex marriage or in vitro fertilization, and decide, yeah, I'm just in the mood to do it from the pulpit today. I don't care who's in the crowd. I'm just going to go for it because, you know, people need to know.
Right.
Is that the right context to form their conscience? Well, not necessarily.
Right.
I need to find a time when they're open and they're prepared. And sometimes that's why pastors have to wait 2, 3, 4 years to establish a confidence with their people to know, so the people know that they love them, that they care for them. And then they can give them these nuggets of truth, which might seem like bombs to people, but these nuggets are meant to be something that's chewed upon and they say, oh, I never even knew that.
Yeah.
I remember so many times sharing aspects of sexual morality, and this is going to sound crazy,
uh-huh,
with my mom. I know, you're like,
that does
what?
Sound crazy.
What were you doing with, yeah. Well, she would say, well, Chris, not Father Christopher at this point in time, because I'm still her son.
Right.
Chris, we never heard any of this stuff in marriage prep. We never heard any of this stuff elsewhere. And I was like, Mom, well, this is kind of what the church teaches. And she's like, I wish I would have known this.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I wish someone would have told me. We only had one session of marriage prep, and then I got married, and then that priest left the church, and I didn't know what to believe. And I'm like, I'm so sorry, Mom.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry that you went through that experience. But the goal should be that we don't hold back the truth, but we give the truth out of love, and we say, this is something that's going to set you free in the long run.
Right.
So the whole idea of ignorance is bliss is actually a misnomer.
Yeah.
Because we are responsible for actions. We're not necessarily responsible for what we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so many times when people will say, why didn't anyone ever tell me?
Yeah. So that off of that, I know a lot of people will say, or I've seen online in different chat rooms, whatever, comments. Chat rooms don't exist anymore, Renee.
No, they sometimes
do. They do.
They do. You just got to look in the really weird places online.
Okay.
But yeah.
But they'll say, you know, things like, well, if they didn't know that they were doing something sinful or wrong, then they're not culpable for it. So that kind of goes along with that well-formed conscience. But that doesn't mean don't form your conscience, because then you're never responsible for anything.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So I'll give you a very hard-hitting aspect of this.
Okay.
One has been what we were taught when it comes to abortion.
Yeah.
So the church teaches that if someone were to commit knowingly and acknowledging that they know all the truths of the Catholic Church and they go ahead and commit an abortion, it's considered a major mortal sin.
Right.
But also an excommunicable offense, which means that they automatically excommunicate themselves from the church in that moment. And I know people are listening are like, Father, why do you say that? I didn't want to know this. Actually, if you don't know it now, you'll hear it in the confessional later on. So it's an excommunicable offense. Now, if someone comes to me in confession and they say, I didn't know any of this stuff, I'm so sorry, Father. I say, okay, you didn't know this. So you're not, per se, excommunicated.
Mm-hmm.
And within the church in our diocese, every priest has been given the ability to lift that excommunication in that moment. But I'll say, so you know in the future, this is big. This is big stuff. You need to be very careful about what you're doing and really think about what's happening. And people might say, well, why is abortion this way and not like murder? Well, everyone knows with murder what you're doing. But a lot of people don't realize that it's the same sort of thing that's happening with abortion. But there's also people who will come to me and who will have this complete and total ignorance. And I have to listen to them as best as I can with love and say, you know, you may not have committed a mortal sin. So you have those three aspects. So you have to have full knowledge of what you're doing in the sense of knowing what it is. It has to be something that's grave, and you have to freely choose it.
Right.
So say that person has freely chosen it. They don't know that it's grave, but it is something that's grave. And they come to me and I say, okay, you may not have committed a mortal sin in this moment, but from now on, you know that this is what this is.
Yep.
And that truth is, yes, meant to set us free. But other people will say, but Father, that means it's less fun that I get to have or less cool stuff that I get to do. But we're asking the wrong question. Mm-hmm. You know, oftentimes with young youth, they'll come and say, Father, so like, how far can I go with my girlfriend?
Ooh.
I was like, you know, it's like saying, how much can I hurt my girlfriend without it being a, you know, an offense that the police is going to come in on?
That's
how much
can I
use her in this moment? No, that's not the goal. The goal is love, is love. It's saying, how much can I love my girlfriend? And if you're understanding that lens, then you're saying, I would never want to do anything to hurt her.
Mm-hmm.
Because oftentimes it's like, how often can I jump on the edge of this cliff before the cliff is going to fall underneath me? Well, you can try and check it out, but I wouldn't guide you to do so.
Yeah, let's not try it.
Yeah.
Well, if you're just joining us, we're talking to Father Christopher Cowles, pastor at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish in Sioux Falls. So once you have your conscience properly formed, are there certain steps you should take in trying to discern the right thing to do? And maybe that has to do with sexual issues. Maybe it has to do with even right now when we're dealing with COVID. And eventually, we hope the obligation for Mass will return, for instance. So we'll have to discern, am I in a position where maybe I shouldn't go to Mass? How do we discern those things?
Oh, that is a great question. That's a phenomenal question. So when it comes first to if, for instance, we are elderly and we've got a high disposition to be becoming sick, we might say, you know, I don't think that this is worth the overall risk in this moment in time. Until these precautions are there, until the cases go down, I don't think it's necessary for me to go back. But say you're at home and you've been standing or sitting over a particular parcel and throne for a large quantity of time. At that moment in time, you might decide, okay, well, I don't want anyone else to have what I have, so I'm going to stay here.
Yes.
That's actually an act of charity as well. Not just a good act of conscience, but an act of charity because you don't want anyone else to get infected in that moment. But say the obligation is reinstituted and our bishop says, okay, you need to go. In those moments, you really have to weigh with your conscience and say, okay, in my circumstance, am I healthy? Am I doing all right? Can I go through this? Are the precautions in place? Okay, all these things are there. What is keeping me from going now?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not necessarily the words of my conscience. At times, it can be the voice of fear saying, no, 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 you shouldn't go. You shouldn't go. And at times, it's the evil one who's trying to keep us away from receiving the grace of God. Other times, it's simply saying, but it's so much nicer to just be in my pajamas and watch Mass on TV. Okay, that's the other side, which is just us focus on comfort.
Right.
And it should be saying, okay, but what is God asking me to do? He wants me to enter into communion with him. And is there a real good reason for keeping me from doing this?
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is the crazy part. We have always, always in the church taught that if you are sick, according to your conscience, you should discern whether or not you should go.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're highly disposed to getting sick at Mass and it's flu season, should you go? It's something that we should think about. And it's not something we necessarily taught about. So what we're doing right now, we're forming consciences.
That's right. Oh, nice. Didn't know we were going to do that today.
Imagine that. Imagine that. But here's the thing. We could say that our conscience is perfectly formed. There's no problems. But it's never totally formed in this sense. Because there's always things coming. There's always things that are coming down the pipe that we're not sure of and we have to weigh.
And did anyone know we were going to have a pandemic and we'd have to deal with this?
Exactly.
No.
But if we're seeking to live virtuous lives, if we're living each and every day and making those decisions according to our conscience and the will of God and what the church seeks to teach, then we're much more better disposed to make those responses.
Yeah.
I mean, who would have thought that we would have the ability to clone human beings.
Right.
Who would have thought that with time you could splice DNA to a certain extent where you can say, well, I don't really want to have blue eyes for my child. I'd rather have a combination of green and sparkle. They can add a sparkle gene? I don't think so, but it might come to that at some
point.
And saying, oh, I know how much little girls like unicorns. Maybe I can surgically implant a unicorn horn on my daughter's forehead. Oh, she'd be so happy. And she'd probably be weird. But nevertheless, and we just because we have the ability to do it doesn't mean we necessarily should.
Right.
And that's when our conscience is meant to, in a sense, catch up with where technology is and say, no, this probably isn't wise. Just because we can do it doesn't necessarily mean that we should.
Right. And if you're having trouble discerning something, it might be a good time to seek advice from your pastor, from someone you trust, who you think will steer you in the right way. Maybe you have to stretch a little bit and get advice from someone that you think might not always agree with you.
Oh, that's phenomenal advice.
Yeah.
Phenomenal advice.
Yeah.
There's sometimes people who will come to me and they'll say, Father, I want your advice because I know that you're not going to mince words.
Right.
I know you're going to look for the truth. I was like, thank you.
That's a lot of pressure.
thank you. But then there's others who know where to go.
Right.
They're like, well, I've got a feeling this priest might just say it's okay. So I'll ask him. It'll be great. And I can go away. But they know in their heart of hearts, they know in that voice speaking to them, in that organ that is their conscience, that they need to possibly take a step back and not do this.
Right.
And that's the hard part. So you form and you seek out multiple opinions.
Yep.
Sometimes it's just not one. Sometimes you look for multiple sides and then say, which of these resonates with me? Which of these, whether I like it or not, and that's the big thing. This isn't about emotional response.
Right.
It's not whether, oh, I just love hearing what that person says because they tell me what I want to hear.
Yeah.
Well, if they're always telling you what you want to hear, maybe you need to find someone who tells you what you don't want to
hear. Yeah, you need to be pushed sometimes and stretched.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly.
Really great stuff, Father Cowles. We appreciate you coming in today. This is some difficult things to talk about, and you actually made it really easy and entertaining.
Yay! Entertainment. That's awesome.
You did very great. Cool. Thank you so much. All right. Next week, my guest will be Emily Leadham, the Director of Marriage, Family, and Respect Life for the Diocese. We're going to talk about Natural Family Planning Week, which will be that next week. It'll be an interesting discussion about feminism and NFP, so I hope you'll join us for that. That is it for us this week. Join us next week for more Catholic Views.